Everyone, it's Liz here. It's Friday afternoon, and I have a quick update at the top of the show. In this week's episode, we take a look at the metric the state of Pennsylvania is using to determine which counties could be reopened first. You'll hear me say in this episode that the state wants to see 50 or fewer new COVID-19 cases per 100,000 residents per day in order for a county to qualify for reopening. Even though I got that formula directly from the state's website, it's wrong. The real metric is 50 or fewer new cases per 100,000 residents over the course of 2 weeks. There's a big difference there, and a big difference in which counties could qualify for reopening. As of Friday's daily media briefing with Governor Tom Wolf and Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine, the wrong information was still on the state's website, though Secretary Levine seemed unaware of that fact.
So we did revise that on our website, and it was really just a clarification. So I would go to pa.gov, and you can see the exact criteria that we'll be using.
It's worth noting, though, that whether this metric applies over the course of 2 weeks or daily, Allegheny County is still currently below that threshold. Okay, on with the show. This is Pittsburgh Explainer, a podcast from 90.5 WESA. Every Friday, we help you understand some of the most important news stories from southwestern Pennsylvania. It's Friday, April 24th. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Liz Reed. We're 2 weeks away from the beginning of a gradual reopening of the economy in Pennsylvania. This week, Governor Tom Wolf set May 8th as the target date, and late Wednesday evening, he began rolling out the details.
There are going to be three phases, red, yellow, and green. We're currently, obviously, in the red phase statewide, with only life-sustaining businesses operating and Pennsylvanians staying at home, except to fulfill critical needs. As regions hit benchmarks that show that they're ready, they'll move to the yellow phase.
The administration will first focus on the north, central, and northwest regions of the state, where COVID-19 case counts have generally been lower. Starting on May 8th, counties in that region could see the reopening of childcare facilities and currently shuttered retail, such as bookstores and clothing stores. But K-12 schools will still be closed, as will gyms, spas, casinos, and theaters, and bars and restaurants will still be limited to carryout and delivery only. The green phase further lifts restrictions, but businesses will have to follow guidelines about sanitization and social distancing. And under all of these phases, large gatherings are prohibited.
We will be keeping a constant watch on our COVID-19 case figures. And I will caution that we may announce a target date that will have to be pushed back due to new cases. Or we might reopen some areas or some businesses only to have them close again if the virus begins to resurge.
The idea is to replace strict social distancing measures with, quote, aggressive mitigation, basically increased testing and investigation of each case, including contact tracing. To decide when a region can move on to the yellow phase, the administration will consider a whole bunch of factors, chief among them, the per capita number of new cases each day. To reopen, a community must have, on average, 50 or fewer new cases per 100,000 people per day for 2 weeks. Allegheny County has 1.2 million residents, so that means to qualify for consideration for the yellow phase, we need to have fewer than 600 new cases every day. Well, we've never had a day with even close to that many cases. Our highest ever new case count was 76 on April 4th. But that doesn't mean we're opening up in 2 weeks. Wolf says there are other criteria, like how well positioned the local hospitals are to handle a surge of patients.
But we're also going to need to look at areas like testing rates, the ability to investigate cases, contact tracing capabilities, and proximity to high-risk settings.
In Allegheny County, about 1% of the population has been tested for COVID-19. Early on, test kits were in such short supply that testing was limited to people who had symptoms and who had traveled to a known hotspot or come into contact with someone who tested positive. Eventually, as evidence of community spread of the virus mounted, testing became more available, but it's still very limited. Here's County Health Department Director Dr. Deborah Bogan.
And I hope in the next week or two, we'll really see much more wide availability of testing so we can really understand how much COVID-19 is out there among people and not just among those really high-risk groups that we've been testing till now.
Hello?
Hello, Potter. It's Liz.
Yes. Hello, Liz.
How are you?
I'm good. State law obliges me to tell you that I'm recording this conversation.
That is wonderful.
Okay.
Could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Chris Potter. I'm the government and accountability editor, although lately I've been doing a lot of coronavirus stuff.
Well, I mean, that's really the thing that we need to hold government accountable on right now, you know?
Yeah, it's about the only issue there is. So, yeah, you're absolutely right.
So far, when Governor Wolf or Secretary Levine or Dr. Bogan have been asked how much testing we need in order to safely reopen, they've been unable to come up with a metric. Do you have a sense of why it's so hard for them to answer that question right now?
I think there are multiple reasons for why it's difficult. First of all, I don't know that there's a consensus amongst public health professionals about this question. I think some researchers at Harvard said, look, we should be on a daily basis testing up to, I think, 6% of the population of any, you know, given group that we want to look at. 6% of those folks should be tested. There are other people who say that's maybe not realistic and maybe not even necessary. Some people have said, we need to test at a level to get us to a point where 10% of the results are coming back positive, because if you get more than that, it means you're not testing enough.
Okay, that sounds like a little bit counterintuitive, like you want less positives. Can you explain that?
Yeah, the idea is if you're testing people and something like 25 or 30% of the results come back positive, and there are counties in Pennsylvania, especially in the eastern part of the state, where that ratio of tests is coming back positive, it means there's probably a lot more that you aren't getting. It's a little bit like it was compared to me to being a prospector. You know, you go out, you dip your pan in the stream, and you get a bunch of gold nuggets right there. You know there's a ton more gold in that stream that you haven't even found yet because of how easy it was to scoop it out there. So what you want is, if you get so many positive test results, you're getting the low-hanging fruit, and you need to go out even harder to find more positives. So the idea is, if you get down to a level around 10%, where 10% of your results are getting back positives, that means you're probably getting a fairly representative population sample, and that you can kind of proceed with confidence on that level. The other issue for Governor Wolf and for other officials around the state is there's a lack of reagents, which are the sort of chemicals that are used to determine a positive result. There's a lack of swabs. It's not clear that all of these tests work as well as might be hoped. And so a lot of people are just trying to kind of figure out what it is we're doing. There's a spirited debate about whether you should be testing asymptomatic people. It's not clear that a one-size-fits-all approach is the way to go. The amount of testing that you might need to do in Philadelphia or Allegheny County is not the same amount of testing that you would need to do in Crawford County or Fayette or some of these other more remote places. And so there's a question about if you went to Fayette and tested 6% of people, you might be wasting a lot of tests.
The metric that the Wolf administration has laid out that would allow an area to just qualify for consideration of the yellow phase, they want to see, on average, 50 or fewer new cases of COVID-19 every day per 100,000 people of population. If you do the math really quick, that means you need to have, in Allegheny County, 600 or fewer new cases each day. That doesn't seem like a very high bar when it comes to the number of new cases.
Yeah, that's right. We're already under that bar. I think in the past 2 weeks, we've had about 400 cases come out. So it is a bar that most counties, I believe, especially in the western part and the northern part of the state, have already kind of met. The real issue is in the southeast, Philadelphia, and the counties just around it and the counties around that. So yeah, I mean, if that were the only qualification here, I think a lot of counties would be open, but there's still a lot of questions. One is, when do you start that count? When do the 2 weeks start? Is it going to start on May 8th, which is the date when these reopening things are going to start to go, and then we're going to go 2 weeks from May 8th to see how things go? Or will it be the 2 weeks leading up to May 8th? None of that, as I understand it, as we speak now, none of that has been made clear to the counties. So there are a lot of questions here about it, but on the face of it, you'd have to say, most places in the state of Pennsylvania, at least the one kind of hard number that the state has given that you kind of have to meet, most places in Pennsylvania at this point appear to be meeting that number.
In this plan that Governor Tom Wolf put out this week, it says restrictive social distancing measures will be replaced with monitoring and surveillance And yet there's this huge question about how we're going to do that monitoring and surveillance. How are we going to be able to test a number of people that will give us confidence in being able to open up the economy?
That is a huge issue. And having listened to the governor Thursday morning, you know, I have to say that, you know, one of the questions when he was talking about this sort of lack of federal support, one of the things he's talking about is, you know, maybe we need in Pennsylvania to kind of take destiny in our own hands and develop our own laboratories and work with the laboratories we have here now and get them up to testing and da-da-da-da, which makes sense in a way. But again, we're talking now 2 weeks before these new standards, this reopening effort is really set to get underway. It's hard to imagine that we're going to have all of this stuff together by May 8th or any time close to it. And when you talk to county officials here, you know, and you say, well, do you know what level of testing the state is expecting from you? And the answer is, we don't know that yet. We're waiting for the guidance. Well, do you know when you're going to know? And they don't know that either. On the one hand, you realize, of course, this is a situation no one's ever been in. It's evolving every day. So you kind of want to, you know, you got to give these guys kind of the benefit of the doubt and realize what they're up against. But on the other hand, it would be really frustrating. I'm glad I don't work for the Allegheny County Health Department, because I would not want to have to figure out how I'm going to go in the next few weeks, go about the work of figuring out and giving the state what it wants, because it's not at all clear.
Potter, thank you so much for your time and for helping explain this issue.
Yeah, to the extent that anybody can, I gave it my best shot, Liz.
Thanks.
All right, thank you.
It's time for a quick break. We'll be right back.
I'm Dave Isay of StoryCorps. Through StoryCorps interviews, people have found wisdom and comfort in the words of their loved ones. At this moment, we need those connections more than ever. That's why, together with public radio stations, we're launching StoryCorps Connect, an online tool to record interviews with loved ones remotely and become part of American history at the Library of Congress. Learn how at StoryCorpsConnect.org.
This is Laura.
Hi, Laura. It's Liz.
Hey, Liz. How's it going?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there.
So do you live in Philly proper, or do you live in one of the collar counties?
I live in Philly proper. I live in South Philadelphia. I'm Laura Benshoff. I'm a reporter with WHYY in Philadelphia.
What's Philly like right now?
It's definitely pretty eerie. I live in a really dense part of the city. It's usually, you can't really avoid people going out when you're walking around in South Philadelphia. It's sort of historic part of the city where there's all these tiny little row homes and narrow streets. Like on my street, people have to park on the sidewalk so that cars can pass. So everything's really tightly packed in. Definitely after the shutdown order came down, there was some sort of anxiety that you could feel when you left the house. Now I think things have sort of settled, seems to have settled in a little bit, this kind of new normal that we're having. But it's definitely still weird. I mean, you pass by parks on a beautiful day that are empty, and it's just, I couldn't have pictured we would be here 4 months ago.
So this week was supposed to be a really big week for gig workers and freelancers because they were finally going to be able to apply for unemployment, which is something they can't do in normal time. But you reported this week it hasn't gone very smoothly. What are some of the issues that people have faced?
That's right. So this week was the soft launch of a program called Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, which, as you mentioned, is this new bucket of unemployment benefits for people who are normally cut out of that part of the social safety net. And the state rolled it out very quietly over the weekend, just sort of opened up the portal online. And they had a couple of different kinds of issues. I would say one type of issue was a question of people's expectations. People have been filing for unemployment benefits in Pennsylvania since layoffs and mass business shutdowns really started, you know, in the middle of March. But this group of workers, gig workers, people who, you know, work on a temporary or freelance basis have not been able to apply for that. So they've been waiting for it. And when this portal opened up, I think people had really high expectations that this would mean their checks were coming. So even though the state says this on its website, they say, we're not actually accepting claims for money yet. We just want your information so we can start vetting you. I think people had higher expectations. They thought that this would be further along than it was.
We've also heard from people who said that it didn't seem like the application was exactly designed for freelancers and gig workers. Is that right?
Yeah. So the state fully cops to this, that they rolled this out basically at the first moment that they could, but that the application itself has some problems. The first big problem was that many people who are eligible for this benefit were told they weren't. Basically, if you'd been paid anything in the form of wages, so you had any of what are called the W-2 tax forms at the end of the year, if you put that in, that's already reported to the government and that you got an error message saying, oops, go back, apply for traditional unemployment, even if you'd already tried and been told you don't qualify for that either. So a lot of people got that error message.
Even if like maybe 10% of your income was from a W-2 and 90% was from freelance or contract work.
Or less. I mean, I talked to a woman whose boyfriend is a musician and she said he got paid and got a W-2 for a single show he played last year. That still kicked him out of the system. So that was confusing to a lot of people. Yeah, and I think obviously disappointing if, again, there's this buildup of, oh, there's this new form of help that's about to be available. I think a lot of people were frustrated by that. And then the other set of issues or complaints that I heard from people who tried filling it out was that as they went through the application, some of the questions just didn't make sense. You know, if you're a sole proprietor, you're a business of one, why are you being asked about what date you were hired or your last salary or when you would be rehired? And the stakes can feel very high when you are really looking forward to this kind of help and you don't want to get anything wrong.
What has the State Department of Labor and Industry said in response to these criticisms?
The state has said, you know, look, we're getting it up as quickly as we can. We wanted to get something up that was imperfect rather than wait for the thing to be fully finished. It's new and evolving. And they have fixed some of the errors, so that the issue with people who had received a W-2 ostensibly is cleared up. And if you were told you were ineligible before, you can go back and apply again. And I think, you know, they're really pushing that hopefully in the future, when this system is finished, it will be better and more modern and more up-to-date than the current old-school unemployment compensation process, which itself has been buggy and plagued with some rollout issues with the new demand that's been coming right now because of the coronavirus pandemic. So they're sort of saying, we're listening, we're tweaking all the time, we hope to get this thing fixed, but we wanted to get it to you faster so that people could start applying.
Laura, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Liz.
All right, take care. It's time for a quick break. Stay with us.
Want more local news but don't have the time or, frankly, the desire to comb through all the headlines? Let us do it for you. Sign up for our daily newsletter, Inbox Edition, and get the stories you need to start your day delivered right to your inbox. Sign up at wesa.fm/inbox edition.
Hello.
Hi, Bill. It's Liz.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
How do you like working at home?
I'm not real fond of it. I tell you the truth, it's comfortable enough, but I kind of like the office environment, the camaraderie, and, you know, the ability to ask questions and sort of exchange ideas with people. So I have to say that I really quite miss that. This is Bill O'Driscoll. I'm arts and culture reporter for WESA.
So this week you talked to local restaurant owners about how they're faring during this shutdown. What did you learn?
It's rough out there for them. Almost all businesses are hurting, I guess I should say, but restaurants were hit really hard and really early. They had to shut down the ban on dining in service that started March 16th. Since then, according to National Restaurant Association figures in Pennsylvania, more than 80% of restaurant employees have been laid off or furloughed, and businesses down to like 20% of what it would normally be, something like that. Anecdotally, to the restaurant owners I talked to here, two of them were still operating, two had closed completely. So obviously the ones that are not even doing takeout or delivery have zero revenue right now and had to lay off everybody. The two that are operating, they're doing like 10, 15, maybe 20% of their business of what they would normally be doing with just takeout and delivery.
Which restaurants did you talk to?
I talked to Burgatory, which is a pretty sizable local chain that has 7 full-service restaurants. They're all still operating for takeout and delivery. I talked to folks from Double Wide Grill, which has outlets on the south side, Mars and Irwin, although the Irwin location is closed. They're still doing takeout and delivery. and I talked to B52, which is a restaurant down in Lawrenceville.
I love B52.
Yeah, a lot of people do, and they actually started out doing takeout, but they were getting all these folks, they're down on Butler Street, and they were getting all these folks walking in, you know, just for like coffee or French fries, and the owner, Omar Abduhejlis, said he and the staff just were getting freaked out by how much foot traffic there was in there, people coming in for stuff they didn't really need to come in for. It wasn't worth it to them, and they closed after about a week. And then I talked to Dinette in East Liberty, very beloved restaurant, been there for about 12 years. Sonia Finn is the owner and the chef there. She actually closed the day after Allegheny County reported its first case of COVID-19, which was before even the governor imposed a shutdown, because she didn't think the risk was worth it to her employees.
Now, did any of these businesses receive aid through the federal Paycheck Protection Program that Congress created?
Yes, the two larger ones have. Burgatory and Double Y Grill have both received those funds. And to explain those that program a little bit, so it's called the Paycheck Protection Program. It's a, sort of an alternate to unemployment in a way. It's a way for the restaurants to keep them on staff and to keep paying them even if there's no work for them to do.
So you said Double Wide received it and Burgatory received it. Did Dinette or B52 apply and not receive it, or did they not apply?
Dinette applied, but by the time they had applied, the money ran out. So the money ran out in like 2 weeks. And this is something that's happened all over the country. It seems like, one, the program wasn't big enough. It didn't really anticipate the need, because remember, it's for all small businesses, not just for restaurants. So this was $349 billion in this Paycheck Protection Program nationally. Every small business in the country was probably applying for this thing, and the funds ran out.
And I also understand that actually national chains received these funds. How were they able to qualify?
Yeah, this is very controversial. So it was billed as something that was for like mom and pop operations, what we would normally think of as small businesses, you know, your local hardware store, your, you know, the diner on the corner, things like that. But the way it was written, all these really large companies were also able to apply for it, because there was a loophole that said 500 employees at one location. So all these publicly traded companies, really large companies, were getting up to the $10 million maximum that they were able to receive, sometimes even more if they had subsidiaries, and eating up a pretty big chunk of those funds right away and sort of hogging it up. I should say that the way the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP, was administered through banks. It was a Small Business Administration loan, but administered through banks. So these larger companies that have big credit lines, they have good relationships with their banks, they had sort of a leg up on applying for this thing and on getting the funds right away. And indeed, you know, that's what I saw in Pittsburgh. You saw of the restaurants I talked to, Burgatory, which is a pretty big chain locally, got these funds and credited the relationship with their bank in allowing them to do so. So did Double Y, but the smaller places didn't get anything yet.
Now, the Senate passed a second small business aid package this week, and I'll just note that as of this recording on Thursday morning, the House has not voted yet, but they are expected to pass it, and President Trump has signaled his support. So does this second bill address some of those issues?
It seems to, yeah. So what they did with his second bill, which is a little bit smaller than the first one, it's $320 billion specifically for the Paycheck Protection Program. They set aside $60 billion of that for smaller banks and credit unions. It's thought that that'll help give access to true small businesses, or what we would normally think of as being actual small businesses, mom and pop type places.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for your time and for keeping an eye on this topic.
Sure thing.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, Liz.
Bye. As social distancing continues into the foreseeable future for the residents of southwestern Pennsylvania, one possible glimmer of hope emerged this week. The city of Pittsburgh is now accepting applications for lifeguards. There is no set date for pools to open, but the city wants to be ready if it happens this summer. Fingers crossed. That's Pittsburgh Explainer for this week. Our show is produced by Katie Blackley. Larkin Page Jacobs is our managing editor. You can find all of our news coverage at our website, WESA.FM, and of course on the air at 90.5 FM. I'm your host, Liz Reed. Thanks for listening. Let's talk next week.